I circle the sun, I am as they are one. Footprints stretch on here forever. Footprints behind us together. Many eyes have beheld this hallowed ground. In Lakesh, in Lakesh, the only sound.
Coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. 2 hours of civil rights for you and me and who knows, maybe other people as well. Stay tuned.
sorry story of a maladjusted man. He seemed a normal guy, but here's the hitch. He had an eccentricity that banned him from society. The man just wouldn't sing along with Mitch. We'll have to hang him from the rafters, burn him as a witch. The man who wouldn't sing along with Mitch.
He had a normal childhood and he grew up rather well.
He was handsome, he was charming, he was rich.
He was loaded. But then his world came tumbling down as word began to get around
that he was silent when they sang with Mitch. We'll have to hang him from the rafters, burn him as a witch. The man who wouldn't sing along with Mitch.
He got a job in Washington and worked up to the top. Then the Secret Service boys heard someone snitch.
Someone snitched!
So then the boss got real upset and dropped him from the cabinet.
On my team we all sing along with Mitch.
He fled to Cape Canaveral to really get away. He jumped inside a rocket, pulled the switch. On landing he discovered soon he wasn't welcome on the moon.
Up here we all sing along with Mitch.
We'll have to hang him from the rafters, burn him as a witch. The man who wouldn't sing along with Mitch.
Now when his life was over and he faced the pearly gates, he found them locked and felt a nervous twitch. The angels were all occupied, they'd laid their golden harps aside.
And we're singing along with Mitch. There's the Elder Rose in Texas that I have ever seen. Nobody else can master the habits of the week.
And that was a kind of a flashy flashback from 1963, The Man Who Wouldn't Sing Along with Mitch, from the Halifax Three. Boy, I bet nobody remembers who they were. I sure don't. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and the name of the show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. We do it twice weekly. Usually I do it alone, sometimes with others. Today, on Thursdays from 6 to 8 and Sundays in the morning, we have a special guest coming not into the studio, but hopefully over the phone lines, probably, hopefully around 6:30. And that is going to be a San Francisco activist with the San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness, who we spoke with actually 2 weeks ago. I think it was 2 weeks ago. Maybe it was a week ago, on anti-homeless laws in San Francisco, specifically the San Francisco sit-lie law being pushed by gentrification maestros in the hate, who want to make it illegal to sit down on the sidewalk, sort of similar to Santa Cruz. So Santa Cruz is sort of leading the way back into the dark ages. Will San Francisco follow? Well, we'll talk with the Coalition on Homelessness, kind of a legal expert who follows this stuff, helps homeless people to take their tickets to court up there, and we'll see what his opinion is. Before we do, I'm going to pick up on some of the street interviews that I've been trying to catch up with for the last few shows. I've had two extra shows in the last week. Usually, as I said, there's a Sunday and the Thursday show. I did an additional show on Sunday night and then an additional one on Tuesday afternoon. Again, trying to give those folks who I've interviewed a chance to get those interviews out. And we're going to pick them up. We're going to actually start with interviews from January 6th, and I believe we're bumping right into an interview with Curb Hugger Chris, who's often in the studio, or has been a number of times with me, talking about these issues. He's an old a radio broadcaster himself from the East Coast, and he's been in Santa Cruz many years ago. 10 years ago or more, I believe it was during the 90s. At least that's what he's told me. He remembers me. I don't really remember him, but hey, he's younger than I am. So anyway, let's go ahead with that. If you want to call in because you have some updates or some breaking news or some questions or comments, please do. It's 831-427-3772. 831-427-3772. And you can also reach me off-air at 831-423-HUFF, 831-423-HUFF. And finally, if you want to donate something or make a public service announcement or find out more about Free Radio or about some of the other programs that Free Radio broadcasts, you can call the voicemail at 427-4523, 427-4523. And you can catch all these numbers. I think they're all on the website at freakradio.org, as well as applications so you can actually apply to be a member of the collective, get your own broadcast show, and, hey, speak out to the community and encourage the community to speak back.
And, I feel really bad for the guys that are actually staying in the shelter. I mean, I'm staying in the river bottom, but if this is what it's like up at the shelter, and everybody I know is sick up there, everybody, every single person that's staying up there regular is sick as a dog. So if this is what it's like at the armory, then I think
sick
I'm
with the cold.
Yeah, and worse too. I've heard the H1N1's making a pretty fair round around too. I guess it's
those swine flu.
Yeah, there's a lot of them up at MLI.
Avian flu. Right?
There's a line every day they say up there of people that are getting really, really sick. So it just proves that warehousing people like that in a big, you know, horrible situation like there is up at the armory, that's just not the way to, it's not the way to deal with this kind of a problem. It's not the way to provide shelter for people. So, I mean, anything that makes you that sick, you know what I mean, that's a horrible choice, don't you think? You know, do I sleep dry and get really, really sick, or do I get wet and, you know, probably still get sick. I don't know.
Well, you have only yourself to blame. Obviously, you're here because you're a ne'er-do-well, a bum, and a ragamuffin.
Yeah, we all choose.
There are adequate facilities for those who really need the help.
Right. How many beds do we have?
Well, there's the Paul E. Loft, and then there's the armory, which if you add it up, it's like, I don't know, 160, 170.
Right, we got about 1,000 homeless people out here. So
More than that, yeah.
Yeah. They're about at least anyway. So I mean, you know, you got about it leaves you about 95% short on how many beds you actually need. But I mean, it's you know, to give you an example of how much we get blamed around here, I want to add to the list of things that homeless people have been blamed for. But I got attacked by another berserker yuppie the other day. Now, not only are we responsible for the economic downturn of the country, we're responsible for the economic downturn of Pacific Avenue. But now we're also responsible for the fact that the steelhead no longer run up the San Lorenzo River.
Well, I've known that for a while. You clearly are responsible for the death of all the steelhead. Plus, of course, the price of tea in China.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and this guy was dead serious. He dead serious was blaming. He was a lucid, you know, articulate, yuppie, you know, going berserk about steelhead and how mad he was and how all the homeless people have driven all the steelhead out, you know what I mean? And when I pointed out to him that the fact that they move land down there, they take the land movers and they build those quote-unquote fire roads along either side of the river once a year, and that all the silt that has sedimentified into the bottom of the river has made it shallower, and that's why the steelhead don't come up the river. He didn't want to hear about that. It's like, you know, it's actually you folks did it by closing off the estuary by causing erosion in the estuary, which made it less deep. It wasn't as deep, and the steelhead don't want to come up it. They want to go up deep rivers. So
the sight of homeless people on the riverbanks frightened the steelhead away.
Yeah, that's what I think. You know what I mean? And
pretty frightened. We have an individual who's trying to get my attention. You better have something meaningful to say, or I'm going to cut you off, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw you in the paper about the Nazi salute. What's that?
Well, it says that the city council's acting like a bunch of Nazis.
Yeah.
So you have to say, Heil, city council. That's what that means.
Oh.
And for that, they threw you out?
Well, I didn't even say Heil. I just had a raised arm.
High Bush. What's that?
Now, are you permanently banned from the...
No. This was like in 2002, and it was an arrest, and we went back 2 weeks later, and a bunch of us did the same thing, and they ignored it. But there is a federal lawsuit going about it. Yeah.
You're nothing but a troublemaker.
There you go.
Well, that's an opinion pretty much universally shared by everybody here in Santa Cruz, huh, Robert?
It is a statement.
No.
It's not an opinion, it's a statement.
Oh, I know. He is a troublemaker, you're right.
Trouble and just causing havoc. Causing trouble and havoc.
Wherever I go.
Wherever we go. Me too. I'm with him, I'm his partner in crime.
No, I'm not. I'm doing good. Solving problems and solving the economic situation. One man cannot make a nation. One rock cannot make a mountain.
Fair enough. And we've been talking with?
Doesn't matter. Anonymous.
Anonymous.
Well, this is Kurt Bunker, Chris. Like I said, I just want to report that the winter homeless person cold or funk or whatever you want to call it is making its rounds. And yes, I'm terribly sick with it. I've had it about a week now. And
no kissing in the studio if you show up tomorrow.
No, I'll show up, but I don't know. You better put a plastic bag over the microphone.
All right. Well, we'll bag you one way or another.
All right.
Well, let me know about. We're hearing a lot of complaints about musician harassment by Officer Schoenfeld, I believe her name is, and other officers downtown.
Musician harassment?
Yeah. Tickets, driving musicians away with the threat of an anonymous citizen complaint. Unless you move and stop playing, we're going to give you a ticket instead of. There's a law you're violating, which is the excessive noise law. Can you keep it quieter?
Right.
Or. Are you violating that law or not? We have a complaint, but we don't know if you are or not.
Well, I know I share this corner pretty regularly every day with Pete, who has the distinction of being known in Santa Cruz as Santa Cruz's worst saxophone player.
Only saxophone players, actually, on them all.
Well, there's a couple that are actually really good. Pete ain't one of them. But in any case, the Borders regularly calls on him here, the guy up in the office. And I'm out here with him, and he's about as loud and as obnoxious as you get. And I haven't seen him harassed, but I will keep my eye open, though. So.
Yeah, well, they only go after, well, I don't know. They go after people that... It's hard to tell what their standards are.
After dark, too? I'm a daytime kind
of... Yeah, well, they went after four of us in the day on Wednesday for singing political songs in front of the bookshop during a protest about the homeless memorial and the Coonerty compassion-free statements about Ronnie Curry's meal here, or her burritos. So it may be a politically motivated thing, but I think it's also a general crackdown on musicians because we've heard that more of that happening, mostly after dark, though, yeah.
Yeah, mostly after dark. All right, well, I'll keep my eyes open tonight. I'll be out here tonight after dark a little bit, so keep my eyes open. See if I can get some pictures or something.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, Pete.
So, an anonymous woman with her two children walking by just came up to me and commended me, although I wasn't quite clear what she was commending me for, but said she was a defender of mine on the online edition of the Santa Cruz Sentinel. Although she tended to post under different names and was afraid to give her name and to be on the radio. So, I have my supporters, or I guess she's someone who so identifies herself, and we'll see if I can successfully run for president now. So I'm here by the National 9 Motel. It's around 20 to 1, talking with
Gordy.
And you're flying a sign that says, Iraq vet, no work, no luck, anything helps, God bless. How long you been out here?
About a year.
And how long you been at the spot today?
Oh, this spot? Just about 10 minutes. I just got out here.
Any hassles at the spot? Have you been here previously during the week?
They always hassle me here. So they have Sealy, I know, has a hard-on for us and a couple of other ones. But the worst they can do is give us a ticket, so...
How many tickets have you gotten here?
Oh, God, a handful, probably at least 30.
And what happens to those tickets? You get,
they go to collection.
And has that affected your ability to drive or to get credit for your new house?
Probably driving. I know it's going to probably to keep threatening this and go on my driving report. So once that happens, I'm going to be kind of stuck here even longer, so...
Well, you said also that last night you had some additional problems at around your camp.
Oh, this morning, or actually yesterday morning, the sheriff's office came by and woke us up at 7:30 and just pretty much hassled us and ran us and found an old warrant for my girlfriend. So she's gone for a little bit, but
her crime.
It was actually back in 97, she was, ran from Blaine Street, actually. So she got, she found out she was deathly ill, and she kind of flipped out and wanted to be with family, and, she's still alive, but, but yeah, they found out, that warrant
Blaine
came
Street
out.
Is a women's facility.
Yeah, it's the minimum facility out here, so... She walked away from it back, which, you know, of course, you know, she's going to have to pay, you know, she did what's wrong, of course, but timing wasn't great, but never really is.
So what was she being held in Blaine Street for?
Originally, I think it was under the influence. So this is back...
Of a controlled substance?
Yeah. Yeah, this is back before...
Cocaine, crack, methadone?
I'm not sure.
Heroin?
I think it was heroin. I think it was...
Sugar?
So, I don't know. I think it was heroin.
Right.
So, I'm not really sure.
Any violent crimes associated with her?
No. No. It's all, you know, under the influences and possession.
only you and she were affected by this wake-up, or were there more people in your camp?
There was other people around our camp, and they, of course, went through and just, you know, got their names and all that other stuff. But we were pretty much the first camp they came across, and pretty much they were the first ones that they focused on. And so, of course...
You were outside the city limits since these were deputies?
No, actually, we were actually over by the freeway, Caltrans land. So Caltrans knows we're there, and they're really cool. You know, as long as we clean up our camp and, you know, respect the place, you know, they don't mind if we're there. But
are you going back to the same place tonight?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I'm gonna always, you know, we have a tent up there and a couple of tarps, and you know, I got a pallet and a queen size mattress, and you know, it's actually pretty. It could be much worse.
Yeah, do you mind if I play this on the air?
I don't mind.
And we've been talking with
Gordy.
And, Gordy, do you have any other comments you want to make about this, that, or the other?
No, I just think that, you know, I've been homeless out here for off and on about 6 years. And, you know, it's once you get caught up in that trap, it's really hard to get out of. And there's a lot of, you know, not specifically, not just, you know, people that have the assumption that, you know, they're drug addicts. And that's not necessarily the case in a lot of people. You know, a lot of people have mental issues. A lot of people have, you know, like me, I have work issues. So, you know.
What do you mean by work issues?
No, I just can't find work. You know, and nowadays with the economy and you know, I filling out applications nowadays, 90% of that stuff's online, and it's just so impersonal, and it's not like it used to be. So, you know, I'm doing a lot of that stuff and doing the best I can without a computer. You know, I got to go to the library for an hour here and there, and it just...
Well, there's always McDonald's. You can flap jacks.
Yeah, but all the Mexicans take those jobs. I don't speak Spanish.
Do you have to speak Spanish to get a job?
Seems that way. I don't know, you know, this McDonald's right here, I don't know one person that doesn't speak Spanish.
Have you applied?
No, I haven't. Not for
well, I want to hear you apply. I want to see you flapping those burgers.
Okay. All right. I'll be more than happy to do that, you know.
In the meantime, you'll be selling street spirits here at the corner of Highway 1 and Highway 17?
Yep. I'll be here.
All right. Again, we've been talking with...
Gordy.
Thanks, Gordy.
All right. Thanks, Robert.
Well, we're down here in front of the coffee roasting company on Sunday, the 10th of January, 2010, and I'm talking with...
Raccoon.
Senor Raccoon, a.k.a. Ray. It's about 15 to 2, and you have another discouraging reality to report.
Yeah, I got my backpack ripped off last night. I was sitting over my graphics on my bench where I was sitting evenings, and it was wall-to-wall people down here. And I stepped around the corner to be 25 feet away from Pacific Avenue, of course, for their new smoking ordinance, to smoke a snipe, which is a half cigarette.
Go ahead.
And I was gone for all of maybe 30 seconds. I came back around the corner, was gone. My backpack was gone from the bench. And
this was after an earlier backpack was stolen from your campsite?
No, that backpack was also stolen from the bench, but that was about four days before that.
So two backpacks were stolen?
Yeah, that was my own stupidity, that one.
In the same area?
No.
Now, you've been down here kind of panhandling it near Del Williams Julius for how long?
Well, since I got back in September, I think we flew back here from Phoenix on the 9th of September, I believe it was.
And you're out here pretty much every day?
Yeah, pretty much.
And have you left your backpack at, you know, unattended at certain other points?
Yeah, and I've never had a problem. Like when I've got my sign and stuff, or I get a cup of coffee, or, you know, I'm only going to be away for a couple of minutes, I'll just leave it, and it's never been a problem. You know, just wall-to-wall people, most of them are honest, and that's what was so shocking about last night. It was wall-to-wall people, you know, so whoever came along just swept it up, and, you know, nobody was paying any attention. But other than that, here in Santa Cruz, I really haven't had any problems with that kind of...
We don't know in either case whether it was a housed person, a homeless person, but both of these incidents happened on Pacific Avenue near Del Williams?
Yeah. I don't know, unless the person was a compulsive thief, why it would appeal to him. It was a pretty tore up old backpack. I pretty much have to say it's probably, and I, you know what, I don't even want to put it out there, but it was probably another homeless person.
Why do you think that?
I don't know. It just doesn't seem to me that something that would appeal to, like, unless, like I said, a compulsive thief or somebody that's hard up for drugs that's thinking maybe there's some dope in there, or, you know, a dirty pot pipe I can clean, something like that.
Is there any identification on the backpack that would help you to, somebody saw it, they should call 423-HUFF and let me know, and I'd let you know.
Well, the first one was an Adidas backpack. It was kind of unique. It was black and had a little cell phone pocket on one of the shoulder straps. I got it from a good friend of mine, and she gets them from her mom in I think she said Lake Arrowhead. And it had a white water bottle with it. The kids give me a white water bottle for Christmas. And the second one was just an old, tore-up, boxy-looking backpack. It said something about Cabrillo College. It was four letters, and then I think it said health or something like that. It had a little symbol on it, and it said Cabrillo College on the bottom. But it was old. It was an older backpack.
What colors were these?
Oh, they were both black.
If anybody sees these backpacks, how big were they?
Probably approximately a foot by a foot and a half, I guess you'd say.
Right.
They're just your standard size book bag type backpack. I don't like carrying anything bigger because I just end up carrying more crap, you know.
Any other gloomy or positive news from the street?
Well, you know, as all is expected, it's slow after Christmas. You know, Christmas comes and everybody blows their wad on their Christmas gifts and stuff like that. Or if they're coming to help the homeless, they'll give you gift cards and things like that. And, you know, it's just the after Christmas blahs. Other than that, you know, no
How
problem.
How are the police treating you?
You know what? I haven't really even... Sergeant Harms kind of incidentally helped me out one night. There was some crazy lunatic. I was standing over there underneath the World Market Bazaar under the awning right there in front of the windows, and it was just drizzling. And I was looking at the stuff in the window. I turned around, and there's this big dude standing there, and he pushes me up against the glass. I looked at him, and he goes, "What?" And then he pushes me again, and he goes, "Ha ha," and he takes off running down the side street there. And then I didn't realize it, but Sergeant Harms was over there by that swinging sculpture, that pendulum. And he comes over and goes, "Was that guy just giving you grief?" I said, "Yeah." He pushed me against the window. And then he went running after him. And then about 5 days later, I seen Harms down here, and I asked him, did he get him? He said, "No." He said, but he knew who he was. So.
Well, that sounds like good police behavior.
Yeah, well, at least everybody says he's a real hard asshole. He probably is, but I just haven't crossed him up yet. But he's been
always good to hear when police act in a positive way, and I want to get those reports.
He's pretty cordial to me, you know. But Winston's one that's got a. It's like he just picked someone to, you know, because it's pretty obvious he's picking on me when I'm sitting there, and then there's a dude that sits right there every day without fail, and you're only supposed to be in one spot for 1 hour every 24 hours, and it's like these people are invisible. But every time, you know, he walks by me, he'll crane his neck to see if I've got a cigarette burning or whatever he can get. I mean, he's giving me tickets for leaning against the post while I'm sitting there.
What happened to that ticket?
It's still my, well, it wasn't my backpack.
Ah, well, you can't win them all. There it goes. Go get him, Officer Winston.
Yeah.
Again, we've been talking with
Ray the Raccoon. Click, 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 click.
Thank you, Ray. Anything else?
No, but happy holidays, and I'm glad everybody survived.
May you find your backpack and be more successful in the future with others. If you see a black Adidas backpack or a black Cabrillo College backpack, get in touch with me at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will get in touch with you.
All right, thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Ray.
Right, have a good day.
Raccoon man. Raccoon comes from the two black eyes you receive in an untoward incident in a bar many states away.
Yeah, many states away and many years ago, too.
So we're here in front of Dale Williams talking at this stand. Looks like curb hugger Chris is at it again with his sign, spare change, street spirits. Here's a sign, Obama's wars, when will you speak out?
He says I still got to move every hour. So just so you know, maybe we should try to catch Officer Winston who just walked by.
Well, you do have that's a display device, that little cup with the money, because we don't want your kind collecting money from innocent tourists. You're only going to use it for drugs and donuts. We know that.
All right. I still got to move, even though I'm selling the street spirit. I'm just letting you know. Even though I'm political and I'm selling the street spirit, he says I still got to move.
Well, it's not that you're selling the street spirit. It's you have a display device. If you get rid of the display device,
like
you can sell the street spirit. No, the hat. That's something capable of holding tangible things. Read your ordinance.
It's my cash register. It's the money from the people.
And the hat, by the which we mean not the hat on Kerbucker Chris's head, but the hat in front of him as a kind of a device for collecting coins. That's the hook that the city has been using to move along or severely restrict panhandlers, and it also apparently impacts people selling Street Spirit newspaper, although I suppose that could be argued. We actually have a telephone call. This is quite impressive. It might well be our man from San Francisco. Hi there, you're on free radio, hopefully. Can you hear me? Hi, can you hear me? Yes. Bob Offer Westward. Just the man I'm wanting to hear, but can I get you to call me on another line? For some reason, this line is acting up. It's try 831-427-3772. Cool. And, yeah, the 831-469-3119 line has not been doing well the last couple of shows. I'm not sure whether that's or why that is. We're going to try the other line, but that does mean you can't call in, or you can try, but I don't know if you are going to succeed, those of you who want to talk to Bob Offord Wertort. Hey there, we hope you're on free radio.
Hi there, Robert, this is Bob from the Coalition on Homelessness.
And the full name of you is what?
Is Bob Offer Westort.
I kind of got it. Bob Offer Westort. Thank you, Bob. So we talked actually about the issue a bit about Sit Lie. The law we have in Santa Cruz, which is actually pretty severe, which makes sitting on any sidewalk near a business within 14 feet of a building, 14 feet of a crosswalk, 14 feet of a kiosk, 14 feet of a bench, 14 feet of a phone booth, 14 feet of a directory, it goes on. And you saw the ordinance because I sent it to you.
Yes.
A crime. And then you haven't had that kind of a law in San Francisco, but you've had police running around kind of enforcing what, blocking the sidewalk, I don't know, being poor without a permit. What kind of laws do they enforce? Jaywalking, you mentioned last time.
Sure. Are you talking about the, in general, police enforce a number of different laws against homeless people as means of harassment. Obstructing the sidewalk is one, which they'll use against homeless people, whether or not they're actually blocking the sidewalk. The law requires a person to actually be blocking the sidewalk. If you can't get past them, and if they're doing it deliberately, that's obstruction. Police frequently issue that even when a person is easy to get around, or against the side of a building or what have you. Jaywalking, of course, is a very common one for harassing any minority group, and that's true across the country. Let's see. There's a trespassing law that is used when a person is sleeping against the side of a building, even if they're on the sidewalk. Those sorts of things. It's pretty common throughout California, I think.
And I noticed this law. Can you hear me?
Yes. You're a little faint, but I can hear you.
Okay. Let me turn it up a little bit. Is this better?
Yes.
I noticed this law because I was, I looked at the Palo Alto Sit Lie law where Victor Frost is fighting in court against various tickets.
Yes.
And, then, of course, in Portland where the Sit Lie law was ruled unconstitutional last summer. So, but I'm wondering, San Francisco has never successfully passed a Sit Lie law, although, of course, they've beaten the shit out of Food Not Bombs people. And they have driven Food Not Bombs repeatedly away. At least was mostly 10, 15 years ago. And I think that I don't know if they're doing it as much as they used to. In fact, maybe you can give us an update. But they don't really have a Sit Lie law. Hasn't been one in San Francisco. There has been one in Berkeley that was passed, thrown out by the legislature, then passed again 10 years later. And I guess I'm not sure where it is now. So what is it a real serious possibility in San Francisco, a Sit Lie law, or is this just another sort of PR thing, pressuring by the, gentrification groups, Haight-Ashbury Improvement Association, and so forth, and the hate.
Well, there actually has been a Sit Lie law in San Francisco before.
Oh, sorry about
that.
In
1968, we had a Sit Lie law passed. It was opposed at the time for being anti-hippie. It was believed that it would be used to target a particular group. And in 1979, 11 years later, the ACLU challenged it for just that reason.
Successfully.
Successfully? I'm sorry, I couldn't make that out.
Successfully. It was successfully challenged by the ACLU?
No. the ACLU's challenge was not successful, but another challenge the same year was. The law, which was Section 20 of our police code, was repealed and was replaced by our current sidewalk obstruction ordinances.
And what is the current law regarding loitering sitters and liars?
Sure. So in the prior law, it was simply illegal to exist on a sidewalk. If you weren't somebody the police liked, you couldn't be on the sidewalk. In the current version of the law, which has been around since 1979, it's illegal to deliberately block the sidewalk, which is fairly reasonable.
Is that invoked much?
It is, and it's invoked incorrectly all the time.
And has there ever been a successful lawsuit to enjoin selective enforcement of it? Has that ever been tried?
I don't know if it's ever been tried. It hasn't been tried recently.
Uh-huh. And you have people like, what's his name? I'm not sure his last name.
Evans, I think you're thinking of.
Thank you, yes. Arthur Evans, who writes on the San Francisco Bay Guardian blog in a, you know, a spirited defense of the sit lie law, although he doesn't really give us any indication of what the law will actually say. He's concerned about, as we talked about in the last show, gangs of alcoholic, drug-dealing, violent gang members who are taking up the sidewalk as turf and turning it into their own territory, menacing the disabled, the gay, the elderly, the young, the beautiful, you name it. So,
and I think that's a dark fantasy of a San Francisco which doesn't exist.
Really?
There are not right now gangs of violent, alcoholic, drug dealing, I don't remember the rest of your description, abusers of the public in the hate. I'm not going to deny that there has been some inappropriate behavior. There most likely has. But there's also laws which govern that behavior already. We have laws against assault. We have laws against drug dealing. And of course, just being a member of a community, which is, I think, what he's referring, you know, groups of friends as gangs. That's not illegal and it shouldn't be. So Arthur is seeking for a law to prohibit something which isn't even happening.
Huh. Yeah, I haven't gone back. I kind of carried on a debate with him online for a while. You've been to the website?
Yes, yeah.
And I kind of gave it up because I didn't really have too much new to say. Plus, I wondered, and I guess that's the question I asked you a few moments ago, how serious is this law as a threat? How likely is it to pass what have always seemed to me to be, however ineffectual, but still much more liberal board of supervisors than most other city councils or boards statewide?
And it's difficult to answer that question. I mean, a law can pass, of course, in two different ways. It could pass through the board, or it could pass through the electorate. And I have to say, I don't know. I'd say we have a fairly divided board of supervisors right now. There's a somewhat progressive branch and a fairly conservative branch. The progressives tend to outnumber the conservatives, but there's a chunk of the progressives who are kind of wobblers. And you know, we'll see what prevails.
Hmm.
Now, regardless of whether or not the law passes, I don't think we're going to see it on the books in San Francisco 5 years from now. I don't think that this sort of law would be able to withstand a constitutional challenge.
Well, you say that back in 1979 there were two challenges, the ACLU challenge and another, and the ACLU one failed, but the second one didn't.
Mm-hmm.
What did you actually look into that whole thing? We legal scholars are fascinated with such things, and
sure.
Why did one follow and one didn't? And one proceed and one didn't. What happened there?
I'm actually waiting to see a copy of the ACLU's challenge, so I couldn't tell you. The challenge which succeeded is a case, Jennings versus Superior Court of San Francisco, which was heard by the Ninth Circuit. They were able to demonstrate fairly effectively that there was a conflict. And this wasn't a constitutional challenge. But that there was a conflict between San Francisco law and California law in terms of sidewalk behavior. Section 647C of the Penal Code makes it a misbehavior to wording directly, but to maliciously block the sidewalk. So they held that San Francisco's law needed to be interpreted in a way that it conformed with the state's law. Is this making sense?
Yeah, sure. The state law has supremacy.
Right. So the San Francisco law needed to conform with the state law. That I think that the judge's words were that if there is any social harm caused by blocking of the sidewalk in San Francisco at all, it is only in cases where it is done so maliciously. And therefore, the law needed to be interpreted in that light. So because of that, the use of the sit-lie law that existed at the time was deemed not to be in accordance with state law, and the law was repealed and replaced by laws which said exactly that.
On the other hand, sit-lie ordinances have not been successfully challenged broadly. I know that we got one thrown out down here on the local level back in 1994, but it was promptly replaced by one that was somewhat less restrictive, but the restrictions have been growing over the years. It was originally 6 feet from a building. The first law, which said you can't sit on any sidewalks downtown or actually anywhere in town, I think with some exceptions. And that one resulted in mass protests, big arrests. People from San Francisco came down. It was in May of 1994. And there actually was a video made about it. And 40 people got arrested, went to jail. And the courts, in a very rare decision here, found the law was unconstitutional for a couple of reasons. So the Mayor Kennedy, after blustering a bit that he was going to appeal the decision, simply went back and changed the law to make it you can't sit within 6 feet of a building any time of the day or night in a business district. And that law has never really been challenged. And I don't know if it's been that kind of law has been challenged anywhere in the state. The one that's been, maybe it has, I don't know, but the one that you're looking at now, as I understand it, I haven't seen the wording, and maybe you haven't either, is only on one street, Haight Street, right? And it has to do with sitting or lying anywhere, what, on the sidewalk on Haight Street? Is that what's being suggested, or do we not know what they're talking about?
We actually have, we've received a leaked copy of a draft of the legislation they're talking about.
Aha.
And it the draft version that we've seen only lists Haight Street, but then it says, you know, in the following areas, 1, Haight Street, 2, and then in brackets it says, other areas, question mark. I know that the police department is floating around a memo, which we have not been able to get a copy of, which would list all the areas they would like to see the law apply.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you began by beginning to ask another question, which was, you know, we've seen challenges to these laws on constitutional grounds fail. Is that what you were beginning to say?
Yeah, or the, at least I haven't seen anything successful on a broad basis that challenges them.
Right, and so I think it's kind of important to look at how the law has been challenged in the past, and what kinds of challenges have been successful and what kinds have not been. So when we've seen challenges to sit-lie laws fail, typically they've challenged the law on facial unconstitutionality,
facial unconstitutionality.
Thank you.
Meaning that the very wording of the law makes it unconstitutional under all circumstances, right?
That's right. And such laws generally don't treat with constitutional issues so directly that the courts can rule effectively on that.
Right. Let's go ahead.
When we've seen the law challenged as being unconstitutional as applied, the courts have tended to respond differently. So,
explain to people what that means.
Sure. So, if a law is used to violate the Constitution, even though the wording of the law is not in conflict with the Constitution, the law may still be considered unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, in Los Angeles, there remains a sit-lie law which was used and continues to be used to target homeless people. The law itself didn't say anything about homeless people, but the courts found that the law was in violation of the Eighth Amendment when you take in combination the wording of the law, which prohibited sleeping or sitting or lying on LA sidewalks across the board at all times, and the reality of homelessness in Los Angeles, where you've got a homeless population of tens of thousands and only a few thousand shelter beds. So they held that it was a violation of the Eighth Amendment as it forced certain people to be in violation of the law at times.
Mm-hmm.
So that was unconstitutional as applied, even though the wording itself didn't conflict with the Constitution. Unfortunately, what happened in the Jones versus L.A. case is that the
precedent was thrown out in favor of a settlement.
Exactly, it was depublished, I guess is the term. Mm-hmm. A similar thing happened in Berkeley with their older sit-lie law. The in settlements, the city agreed to repeal its sit-lay law, and they did, but enacted a new one 13 years later.
Huh. So you're not sure whether – I know that the initiatives – like I think there was an initiative around panhandling, with the prohibited panhandling on medians, and that didn't make it through the board of soups, but then was sent to initiative.
Right.
And did it pass?
Yes.
Similarly, a law restricting what cash, care not cash.
Little care not cash, yes.
That also passed by initiative after being rejected by the board.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems to me you have a more liberal board than presumably electorate, or at least I'd like to say a more informed and liberal board. But you know, that's just my view.
I mean, I would also like to say more informed. It's a lot easier to educate the 11 members of board of supervisors than the 700,000 people of San Francisco, or 800,000 now.
I wish that were true of the 7-member city council of Santa Cruz. That would be nice. I don't know if that's true. I think they're just beyond rehabilitation, in my view. But
I also want to point out that it's the people of San Francisco have not uniformly been in support of the criminalization of homelessness. So the last time that a sit-lay law was introduced in San Francisco, Mayor Frank Jordan, this is back in the mid-90s, introduced a sit-lay law on the ballot, and the voters turned it down.
What was the vote?
It was pretty close, actually. I want to say that it was 52-48 or so, but I'm not looking at the numbers right now.
Well, I know that also, you know, I guess, I don't know who Brown ran against when Jordan's term was up, and Jordan instituted, of course, the infamous
Matrix
program, although it has to be said that Agnos before him was no, you know, was no great shakes. He was also going after homeless people and arresting people in vehicles and sending out the cops, or at least allowing the police to go out after Food Not Bombs and groups that were feeding homeless people.
Sure, but not with anything like Jordan's, you know, viciousness.
Right, and I think Brown, of course, kind of laid back on the issue of, or backed off on the issue of feeding, but he then continued to go after homeless people for sleeping.
Well, so Brown actually ran against Jordan and prevented Jordan from having a second term, and part of his campaign was, you know, included attacking Brown's viciousness against homeless people. He then himself changed policy, but his campaigning was much kinder.
Kindler, gentler campaigning.
Yes. Uh-huh. The reality, of course, was very different from that. After
right.
He
changed
mayor.
His stripes once he got into power. Newsom is your current mayor, and he presumably is. He has or hasn't taken a position on the sit-lay law being proposed.
To our knowledge, he has not.
Okay. I mean, he did take a position on care, not cash, right?
Yeah. Care, not cash was his baby. He kind of rode into office on its back.
And that, of course, is a proposal where you strip people of their GA, requiring them to go into seedy hotels and...
Sure. So the idea of care not cash is that homeless people who receive general assistance, which is state-funded, county-administered cash benefits for very low-income people who don't qualify for other you know, governmental benefits. So the people, homeless people who receive GA... use that money on alcohol or drugs, and that it's their bad spending habits which keep them homeless.
Has there ever been any documented study of this allegation, which, of course, is widespread belief among certain groups of people?
No, but when you're playing off people's prejudices, you don't need data on your side.
Right.
So that was the root idea, and the solution, which Newsom had in what he called an epiphany, was that the government would withhold about 85% of a person's GA check, a homeless person's GA check, guarantee them a shelter bed, and then apply that money toward renting them an SRO hotel room in a master leased SRO hotel. So the city would lease the entirety of an SRO hotel and dole those rooms out to people who were on GA.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that real estate is so expensive in San Francisco that 85% of one GA check didn't get one person into an SRO hotel room. It took about three checks to get a person into that room, which means that two-thirds of Care Not Cash recipients were just stuck in the shelter system. And they never received their rooms and got their much-reduced checks, and their homelessness didn't change.
And that has been – I've never seen that documented. I guess Street Sheet perhaps documented that at some point.
Yeah, we have documented that. It's been years. I have to has to dig to find out where that is.
Right, and it's still the case. It's still the program, right?
That is still the program, yep.
Okay, now it should be said that we are speaking with Bob Offer-Wartort.
Westort.
One of these days. Of the Coalition on Homelessness up in San Francisco, which has been what? It's been around for about 20 years now?
Jeez, this is its 23rd year.
I know the street sheet has been around since 1989, I think.
That's right.
But I don't know about the actual coalition, how long it's been around.
1987.
So there you go. And we talked to you last time. I got some positive commentary on your, your remarks, kind of describing what you and others up there do, how people in San Francisco help to fight tickets for homeless people. Over the objections of people like C.W. Nevius, the San Francisco columnist, who bemoans the fact that people don't go to more homeless courts. He's been talking recently about the homeless courts. You want to talk a little bit about those homeless courts?
Sure. There's it's one court. It's called the Community Justice Center. It's located on Polk Street, corner of Polk and Turk here in San Francisco.
It should be said that C.W. Nevius is a... I would like to say a bigoted anti-homeless columnist who writes for the San Francisco Chronicle. You can often find him in the second section, often at the top of the page, if you're a Chronicle reader. Go ahead, Bob.
Sure. And the idea of the CJC is that it's supposed to be a restorative justice court, which means that instead of doling out punishments, it hooks people up with ways where they can make amends for their wrongs to society. Or if people's crimes are based in some kind of health problem, be it a mental health problem or an addictive disorder, they would have access to treatment. So they'd be sentenced with treatment rather than with jail time or a fine. The idea is based on a model in Manhattan, which is very popular, comes out of a conservative think tank in New York. It was supposed to be the next step, according to Gavin Newsom, in solving homelessness after Care Not Cash. What happened is that the court was created without any funding allocated for services. The court exists, but they don't have any services they can actually get people into. They put them on a wait list, same wait list as everybody else. They do have special shelter beds set aside for them, but what that means is that that's 20 shelter beds that the people who actually are seeking shelter don't have access to. There was no funding for the public defender, so the public defender is unable to take those cases. They're assigned to conflicts counsel, and the judge who presides over the court tells conflicts counsel. Conflicts counsel is, incidentally, sorry, I should have explained that. Are private attorneys who have a contract with the courts to take cases where the public defender would have a conflict of interest. Conflicts counsel is told on arraignment by the judge that they have fulfilled their substantial commitment to their client on arraignment and that they aren't required to appear for subsequent appearances.
Well, that's nice.
In the meantime, the defendant is told that they need to come back either weekly or every 2 weeks or sometimes less frequently than that, but mostly it's every 2 weeks, for the following 6 months, where they're to report on their progress with their behavioral health plan, which they create in collaboration with a worker for DPH.
Now, we're talking about the main crimes that these people are accused of are what?
So the number one crimes which get heard in the CJC, and I'm saying crimes with my fingers making little sarcastic quotes, which you can't see over the radio.
Right.
Are sleeping outside. It's 647E of the penal code, lodging, which doesn't necessarily mean creating any kind of structure or breaking into a structure. It means sleeping anywhere that isn't property that you rent or own.
Right, that's a penal code section of the state, which is occasionally used in Santa Cruz, although we have our very own sleeping ban city ordinance, occasionally used in San Diego, although I think it was set aside under the Spencer settlement, similar to the Jones settlement, which supposedly exempted homeless people from nighttime harassment for sleeping. But it's a state code that allows you a misdemeanor it's a misdemeanor, so it allows you a jury trial and a public defender, right?
It should allow you a jury trial and a public defender.
But if you go into these community justice centers, so-called homeless courts, you have to agree to give up both, right?
You have to waive your rights to access the court. And there's a big public education gap on this. What happens is that a person receives a ticket. They're told to show up at court 2 days later. If they don't show up at court, there's a warrant, obviously issued, a bench warrant for their arrest. If they do show up at court, the judge lists off some rights really quickly and says, do you understand these rights? And people being intimidated by a judge say yes. And the judge says, do you agree to waive these rights? And they say yes. And there you go.
And is this, these are ordinary courts we're talking about, or a CJC?
This is a CJC. At an ordinary court, 647E, the DA just drops the charges because they can't win the case.
Because what?
The DA can't win the case.
Is that true? I mean, if such case has actually been taken to trial?
It hasn't been taken to trial recently because, again, in courts aside from the CJC, the DA just drops charges. It happens across the board.
Huh. So, actually, it would be better for a poor and homeless people to go directly to court and let the charges be dropped if they knew about them.
Yes.
But then why do you, as a worker at the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, and we're talking to Bob Offer Westort of the Coalition.
You got it right that time.
I got that wrong again?
No, you got it right that time.
Oh, I got it right that time. Excellent. You had me nervous there for a minute. You attend these courts yourself and advise, or does someone from the Coalition advise people that, you know, what are you doing coming to this crazy court where you have to plead guilty when you're going to find the charges dropped if you go to the other court?
I'm not an attorney, and we don't have any attorneys on staff. We work with attorneys from the National Lawyers Guild, from the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, and from a number of private law firms, but we don't have any attorneys directly on staff. So we certainly don't advise people on what they should do legally at any point.
Well, you don't have to be an attorney to advise people that, you know, there seems to be two different courts. If you're smart, go to another one.
We do inform them of what goes on at the CJC.
Let me ask you about that just incidentally, because I advise people to do all kinds of things, and I have no legal degrees, but I'm very clear about it. I'm not an attorney. Go research this yourself, but this is my opinion. Have there been any kind of legal consequences where people have tried to take you or anybody else to bring you to book for giving legal advice without a diploma?
No one's ever tried to take me to book for that. My understanding, and again, I'm not an attorney, but my understanding is that if you're not an attorney, you're not supposed to give legal advice on individual cases, but you can talk about issues across the board. So I don't tell anybody, you know, you shouldn't go to the CJC. But I say, if you go to the CJC, you're required to waive.
I don't understand why, you know, you weren't, I mean, unless you have some specific ordinance that says, and that sounds like a violation of the First Amendment to me. If you want to advise someone, it's my opinion that such and such and such and such.
Yeah, and I have to say, Robert, that I'm not well enough informed on that. I can't tell you.
It sounds like one of those old urban myths that kind of floats around. But, I've heard the same myth, but I've generally ignored it. And, you know, no one's ever, you know, some people haven't liked some of the things I've said to other homeless people, and because they think it's, you know.
You know, I asked for advice from an attorney once on this, and I just took their advice and didn't look it up.
Okay, well, you're talking to us about homeless courts up in San Francisco, which are being built, and here in Santa Cruz as well. There's a kind of a minuscule embryonic homeless court here, which takes only 10 people a month, and you have to get a special recommendation from various bureaucrats to get into it. So it's the same kind of thing where you have to plead guilty at the very beginning, throw yourself on the mercy of the court, and then they give you a lollipop and a bunch of appointments to show up at.
And a suspended sentence.
And a suspended sentence as well. That may be true. I don't know.
Or the hammer of a threatened sentence.
A threat of a sentence. So in other words, if you don't make your 16 rehabilitation pay off the drug counselor appointments, then you may go back. You may go to jail anyway.
Right. I mean, the way it's done in San Francisco, I'm just guessing about how things work down there, but in San Francisco, the way it works is that the DA, you know, doesn't press charges for a minute. You know, they agree to wait and let you go through the program, what you're doing with the judge. The judge, you know, you report back to the judge every 2 weeks, telling them you've been to so many AA meetings, you've done this, you've done that. And then if you fail to report or if you fail to comply with your behavioral plan, then the DA will actually press charges. And eventually, if you do everything that the way that the court wants you to, the DA will agree to discharge the case.
But you say the major crime is 647E, illegal lodging or sleeping?
Right. I wanted to actually finish that. So that was there are two top crimes which appear there. One is the lodging, and the other is possession of a crack pipe.
Possession of a crack pipe, not possession of a marijuana cigarette or.
No, there have been a number of marijuana cases there, but they're not the majority by any means.
Uh-huh. And.
And to be clear, that's possession of the paraphernalia, not the drug itself.
Although one would think if you have the paraphernalia, you're probably engaging in the drug itself. And I guess the question is.
Well, that's a supposition, right?
It is a supposition, but I mean, I'm not saying that that's something. I don't think you should be found guilty for any of those things because I am not a drug warrior. I don't believe that hard drugs should be criminal either. They should be a medical problem. They're not a criminal problem in my view, but. Nonetheless, in the mind of your ordinary citizen, they are two distinct things. The poor homeless guy sleeping is distinguished from that wild and crazy junkie crack addict who's running around, you know, likely about to blow up the buildings.
We've done research. The court has claimed that they aren't able to track their own cases, which is ridiculous. But we have tracked them for them, and about a third of the cases are the sleeping outside cases, and another third. Are the crack pipe cases, and then the rest is a, you know.
And what percentage of all these cases are of the total number of homeless cases of, you know, jaywalking, being outside, trespass, being in a park after dark, all this crap?
I can't tell you that, but what I can tell you is that for the first 3 months the court existed, the public defender's office represented the cases at the CJC even without funding. They said, you know, we can't, in good conscience, let this happen without people having access to an attorney. It ended up being too expensive for them, and they did pull out after 3 months. But during those 3 months, they reported that two-thirds of all defendants at the CJC were homeless. So in addition to people who are being charged with being outside, you know, they're twice that number in total are homeless defendants. So it very much is a targeted homeless court.
How many people are in the average show up at these courts, I don't know, a month?
I don't know. I couldn't answer that honestly. If you go into the court today, session lasts about 2 hours. That's court for the day, and I'd be guessing that there are 30 defendants there.
Compared with what, 300 defendants on an average in other courts in the same time, or
I couldn't tell you, but I would say that 30 is a blown up number because a number of those people, the majority in fact, are reporting back from prior appointments. So it's not 30 new cases.
It sounds like a kind of a make work program for a special interest group that's pushing this idea. Instead of addressing the real underlying issues, to me,
that would be my perspective as well.
Huh. So, in other words, what we're talking about here with Bob Offer Westort of the Coalition up in San Francisco is various problems, legal problems that homeless people suffer under up there. Specifically, we began with the sit-lie law being proposed by Haight-Ashbury maestros, the Haight-Ashbury Improvement Association, I guess. The police department, police chief Gascon, his name is?
Gascon, yep. Yeah, it seems that we don't know yet where the idea originated. It seems to have come from the captain of Park Station. Park Station is the station which takes care of the Upper Haight and Golden Gate Park.
Mm-hmm.
So Captain Teresa Barrett seems to be the originator of the idea. Chief Gascon latched onto it after not terribly long. And the police really drummed up support in the merchant organizations in the Haight. It didn't come from them. It came to them. But once it was fed to them, they seemed to like it.
No attacks on food servers up there recently for serving poor people food in public places?
No, nothing like the food dump bombs attacks of the 90s.
Because I know that's happening in other states, New Mexico, Connecticut.
Nevada, Florida, yeah, no.
Yeah, that's encouraging. What about the number of sleeping arrests, arrests or tickets for sleeping generally? Is it dropping? Are people, you know, are police laying off because of either the budget crisis or the fact that more people are out, presumably losing their homes and, you know, losing their incomes, or is it rising because of other factors?
No, that's stayed pretty steady.
So it's the same as it was when you began your
right.
work on this?
I mean, it's somewhere between 15 and 20,000 citations a year for sleeping outside.
Huh. And those are mostly infractions or misdemeanors?
Those are mostly infractions.
And so these don't
go to mostly see the misdemeanor charged in the tenderloin because the tenderloin is the area that the CJC has jurisdiction over. So police will charge the misdemeanor 647E from the state penal code, the lodging offense we've been talking about, because it forces people to go to the CJC.
So it's kind of a racket, actually.
It's kind of, yeah. I mean, it drums up cases for the CJC. Otherwise, those would mostly be Section 21 of the police code, which is obstructing the sidewalk, which is, incidentally, I mean, totally bogus in almost every case in which it's charged.
What advice would you give to Arthur Evans, the fellow who is a big supporter of this sit-lay law, who sounds, frankly, in his plaintive and very methodical and very courteous attempt to, you know, push this law, which would make it illegal to sit or lie in on any Haight-Ashbury sidewalk. He wants to find some way to address groups of people that harass other people, and he says he can't really do it because a citizen arrest requires you to call a cop and then fill out a, you know, essentially have the cop fill out a citation and talk to the you know, and give the person the citation, which, you know, the police officer doesn't see it. That person has to be accountable for it and go to court. I mean, I'm actually facing a charge myself coming up for singing on the sidewalk by someone who thought that was unreasonable noise, wanted me to leave and move and end the political protest, and I said no, I said, you know, I'll keep it quiet. But that is an individual citizen who has a problem like that, not with someone who's singing, but let's say someone who's saying, hey, you fucking nigger, get off my, you know, that sort of thing. Somebody, you know, who chases after people. Have you heard of such cases actually being successfully prosecuted under existing laws? Because I know our answer, your answer, my answer, as always, there are plenty of laws that deal with this, but practically speaking, can those laws really be used?
The district attorney's office charges people with assault every day in San Francisco. Every day. I mean, it's not rare.
And assault, by assault, you mean just saying what I just said?
Well, I mean, the hate language, if it's not accompanied by a credible threat of violence, that wouldn't be assault. But chasing after somebody and threatening them, that's certainly an assault.
How about, yeah, you got some money, man. Give me some money. You know, in other words, there's this line where the sidewalk becomes unpleasant. And, you know, it becomes unpleasant for people who feel more vulnerable. They're elderly, they're disabled, they're, you know, smaller of physical stature. You and I, you know, we're skeptical about this in terms of, oh, you know, there isn't really any turf problem.
I think we need to talk about two different things, because I think that there are two different issues here. So one is a case where one person has actually done something wrong to another person, where they've actually done something to damage or cause credible threat that they're going to damage another person. And we do have laws for that. And our district attorney does charge those cases, and they win a certain number of them. They win a good portion of them. And I don't know the numbers, but I spend enough time in court that I see this happen. I know that this happens. So I'm fairly incredulous. There's a lot of misinformation being spread by Park Station in particular, that citizens need to perform citizens' arrests, which is a terrible idea, before they can do anything. I mean, that totally gets rid of any need for a police department at all. If the police can't do anything until there's a citizens' arrest, then Christ, why don't we just have citizens' arrests and the district attorneys deal directly with those? Police all over San Francisco charge people or issue citations and sometimes book people for assault on a daily basis without citizens' arrests. The claims out of Park Station that they can't do it without a citizen's arrest are absolutely ludicrous.
Well, we're not talking about assault. We're talking about infraction violations, which police officers are not allowed to charge unless they witness it, unless a citizen wants to make an arrest. That's true in Santa Cruz, too.
So, I mean, infraction violations is a huge category. We're talking about hundreds of different things.
Right, but these are the minor infractions that are used against homeless people to move them along.
Right.
Let me
talk about the second thing. So I said I wanted to break it into two questions, because I think it is two different questions. The second is I think the term you used was making life unpleasant, right? Is that what you said?
Right, making the whole scene very, very unpleasant, making people feel unwelcome on the streets.
And so there's... I would argue that unpleasant is very, very subjective. There are a lot of people on Haight Street who think that simply being reminded of poverty in our society is unpleasant. So what's the standard going to be if you're talking about this as a criminal justice issue for unpleasantness? If there's something actively being done, we do have laws for most of what is being talked about. If it's simply a presence, then that really shouldn't be criminal.
I agree with you, but again, I'm 6 feet and, 200 and some odd, 225, 30 pounds, and I kind of walk around, take care of myself. If I were different, I might feel differently. And
but let me put it this way: if you were 4'2", would you believe that there should be a law against 6'3" black people walking on the same sidewalk as you? You might very well feel that that's intimidating. You might be, feel that that's unpleasant. Should there be such a law?
You and I both know the answer to that.
But I would throw that question to Mr. Evans. I don't think that this is it. I don't think that in a democracy, in a society in which we believe that all human beings should be able to be active participants, that these questions can even reasonably be asked in public forums and expect to be answered seriously. I think there's a breaking point there where there's simply not a dialogue to be had. If you're asking questions about how do we exclude certain people from society, then you're not ready to exist in a democracy, period.
That's eloquently put. Let me just be the devil's advocate here. We have in 2002, and this is happening on the Pacific Garden Mall, no longer a garden mall, it's a cement mall, they began and have been continuing to remove seating areas because they regarded certain groups of people lingering there as being too poor, too drunk, too loud, any one of a variety of variables, too young and abusive in their speech, too much of a panhandling nuisance. They wanted to end those kinds of congregations of people. In fact, outside of our Metro Transit Center, they blast music to drive away people. The theory being that, that people won't hang around where there's classical music being played. I'm sure you've probably heard that before.
It's a very interesting theory. Is this public property or private property?
Public property.
Okay.
The question is, to me, this is, first of all, even if you had some positive consequences in eliminating a group of people from the area whose behavior, not whose nature, but whose behavior was such as to, be regularly disturbing isn't quite the right word. I have a hard time actually framing this argument because I kind of like your argument better.
Just to be honest with your listeners, I believe that you and I are coming from the same perspective that these things should not be laws. So this isn't really a real debate. This is Bob versus the straw man or Bob versus the devil's advocate.
Sure. You let these bums hang out all over town and take up all these space. They come there regularly. They sit there from dawn to dusk. They take up all the space which other people want to use. They make other people not want to come there. It's just not fair to have a particular group of people make this their turf. What are you going to say about that, Mr. Coalition Man?
It's not fair to allow a certain group of people to exist in public because you would like to exist in public and you feel that their existence makes it impossible for you to. It's a very weird argument. So the argument is that because you don't like seeing people, they shouldn't be around?
No, they shouldn't. They have a right to be around, but if they monopolize large areas of the sidewalk or the...
So when you say monopolize, that means that they use it in such a way that you would want to use that particular spot in the sidewalk for you want to hang out there?
Yeah, no one group should be allowed to monopolize the sidewalk. It should be a fluid kind of situation where people come and go. If you have one guy sitting there all day constantly saying, spare change, spare change, spare change, he's grubby, he's stinky, he smells of urine, he's probably, who knows, might be a needle user. I'm not saying, even if I don't support the drug war, the idea that all this space is being taken up by people who are monopolizing it. If you had a fucking motorcycle gang down there doing the same thing, or a bunch of executives who set up their tables and wouldn't leave, wouldn't we feel the same way? Are we to allow any group of people to monopolize a sidewalk, and should they get away with it just because they're poor?
Well, so it's already against the law, and the law is enforced to obstruct the sidewalk, both under San Francisco law and under state law. In San Francisco, it's MPC 21, 22, 22, 23, and 24. And if I said NPC 21 earlier, I meant 22. That's incorrect. Mm-hmm. And under state law, it's Penal Code 647C.
Yeah, but you don't have to obstruct the sidewalk. So, everybody can walk by. They just can't.
I'm trying to get on with this idea of monopolization is. I mean, is the idea that certain people, because you don't like them, shouldn't be able to hang out in public?
Certain people, because they crapped in their pants, clearly what monopolization
is.
Okay, well, here I'm defining it. They haven't bathed for 3 weeks.
That's not monopolization. Thinking is a monopolization.
No. I'm saying, though, that these are people who are doing whose physical appearance is so grubby and difficult that it's not that I don't mind seeing them, let's say, from a distance, but I don't want to. If I want to sit down on that area of the sidewalk, I'm deterred from doing it because of the presence of these people. Not just that they have a right to be there at certain times, for sure, but if they're there all the time, doesn't that amount to monopolization of the sidewalk?
And Mr. Evans, there is so much sidewalk in Hate Street that you could certainly sit down on the sidewalk. And if this law were passed, you would be just as prohibited as they would.
And, of course, Mr. Evans has said, no, that would only be if I stayed there for a long period of time. But I don't think that's the kind of law that they're asking for in the Hate. They're asking for any sitting or lying on the sidewalk to be illegal, right?
That's right. I mean, according to the draft legislation we've seen, there's no time limit. It isn't, you know, after 5 minutes, after 20 minutes, after 3 hours. It's sitting and lying on the sidewalk in the Hate and other places,
Should people be allowed to colonize the sidewalk, Mr. Coalition Man? You know, I mean, you're suggesting, well, there are other places I could go and sit on the sidewalk. Yeah, but suppose I want to sit occasionally, you know, in some of the choice spots. You know, I mean, there's some nice places to be. And if certain groups of people are always taking up those areas, and these are people who, you know, appear pretty rough, pretty menacing,
they don't want to move. Already got a nice, juicy spot of the private property turf in the Hate, or is it Coal Valley, and you also want to own the choicest spots of the public property?
It's not that we want to own them. We want everyone to have access to them. It should be a downtown for everyone, not just for the skunks, the punks, the drunks, the bums, and the homeless advocates and shysters who are helping them out like the people in your organization.
I think it's ludicrous to claim that a person sitting on the sidewalk prevents anybody else from enjoying the sidewalk.
Well, they clearly prevent them from sitting there. I mean,
it prevents them from sitting in one spot. But I mean, how much square footage does a single person take up? Seriously, I mean, and how broad are the sidewalks in the Hate? I was on Hate Street last night doing cop watch, and I was trying to think, you know, could I actually effectively block the sidewalk right now? And I couldn't. I'm not tall enough to. If I stretched out across the sidewalk, a person could still easily walk around me. There is plenty of sidewalk on Hate Street. There's no question of it being colonized in such a way that that some people can't get access to it. That's absurd.
Well, they can't get access to it, and it's not in the sense that it's blocked from walking through, but people are deterred because you don't usually want to enter groups of people who present a certain kind of appearance.
But the fact that you don't want to interact with people because of their appearance doesn't mean that their appearance should be illegal.
No, it's not that their appearance should be illegal. It's that we want their disappearance to be legal.
And if you're asking for people to be disappeared, I would, you know, refer you to another decade in another country.
Well, actually, we're trying to adopt some of the older traditions here in this country.
And in fact, I think that it's worth looking at the case of Jennings versus Superior Court, in which the sit-lie ordinance that existed in San Francisco back in the late 60s and most of the 70s was found to not be applicable as the police had been using it. And the court cited the Supreme Court, and I think it's the Shuttlesworth case, but I'm not positive. And they said that such laws which allow the police so much discretion bear the hallmark of a police state. That's directly from the Supreme Court of the United States.
Shuttlesworth, of course, was a civil rights activist down in Alabama, I believe, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
It's our own legal system is saying if you want this, what you're asking for is a police state.
Yeah,
and it might
be
nice for certain people of certain economic brackets to believe that there could be police state for some and full democracy for others, but it doesn't seem very realistic in a long-term, sustainable way.
Hmm. Well, you're obviously a namby-pamby liberal, but as we can see, Obama is adopting a different approach, and we're going to send you to Afghanistan with the rest of them. There's good jobs over there, you know. You can help liberate the women of Afghanistan.
Oh, I'm sure they'd be thrilled.
Yes. Well, let me ask you before you go, and you have been generously with us for 45 minutes this time. And again, we have been talking with the ineffable, or actually quite effable, Bob Offer Westort of the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, who not only answers phone calls late at night and makes them, but stalks the streets of the hate looking for police misconduct?
Looking for police misconduct or ways I could try to break the law and fail.
I see. Well, careful you don't sit down on the sidewalk after this latest. Just don't come to Santa Cruz and sit on the sidewalk. You'd be in trouble if you do that here.
I've heard that you've got some really choice sidewalks down there that are well worthy of colonization.
Well, they had already been colonized, mostly by merchants, however, so there's the problem, you know. You got to have money to exist on the sidewalks of Santa Cruz. You're allowed to sit on the privatized areas of the sidewalk at the tables with you, buy a cup of a very tasty cappuccino for $4 or $5. Or is it $3 or $4, you know, but it does require, you know, finances. I mean, you have to have a certain lifestyle. You understand.
Right. No, I understand that for yuppies, the dream is colonizing the sidewalk.
Well, they don't want other people in their turf, man. Come on.
I mean, this becomes a much broader issue, and I don't know, am I taking up too much time? Should I be getting off the phone
now? No, you're doing fine. Go ahead.
I mean, I think there's a much broader issue at hand here, and I think that Sitlai is just one facet of it. But the idea that a certain segment of society should have full control of public space is a really disturbing one, and it's a disturbingly widespread one. I mean, thinking about the gang injunctions here in San Francisco, where youth in certain neighborhoods aren't allowed to congregate within their own neighborhood. I was at a meeting of the Tenderloin Community Benefits District, which is I don't know if you have CBDs in Santa Cruz, but it's a sort of public private partnership, one of those things that Gavin Newsom and his ilk really like, where businesses form an organization with the blessing of the government. They self-tax and then use that money for services which are typically government services. Like
downtown street business districts we're talking about?
Right.
Neighborhood improvement association type things?
Well, like neighborhood improvement associations which have a much stronger than usual blessing from the government.
Yeah, I've had long discussions with Robert Letterman of New York, who's been very active in Artists United Against Fascist Tactics. He's been arrested repeatedly for drawing Hitler mustaches on the mayor's posters, on posters of the mayor and giving them out as artwork. You know, not vandalizing his own work, you know, but. And he's, you know, he talks about this a lot. This downtown business district stuff is really kind of creates private security guards, creates private laws, creates privatization big time, and
it creates a whole paragovernmental set of institutions that replace civil society and democracy. I don't know what you call it, but actually fascism, because it's the wedding of corporate interests with the sort of
police power.
Yes.
Yeah.
But so I was at the meeting of the CBD for the Tenderloin the other night, and they've typically been a much kinder, gentler CBD than most.
CBD community business district or
community benefits district. It's a special San Francisco form of these downtown associations. Typically in California they're called business improvement districts. In San Francisco we have our own friendly smiley face version.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The Tenderloin one, to its credit, has typically been far better than others. It hasn't had private security. But there's still this idea that the people who own the most valuable property, the people who run the businesses, the people who own the capital in this neighborhood, should be able to determine what goes on, should have full control of public space. So an issue was brought up of an SRO hotel here in the Tenderloin. And SRO hotels, for those of you in Santa Cruz who aren't familiar with them.
Single
room occupancy hotels. Do you have them in Santa Cruz?
Not really. I mean, there's some leftovers before the earthquake, but generally not. No.
I mean, it's essentially an apartment building where each apartment is a single room, has no kitchen, has no bathroom. Those facilities are shared. The kitchens may not even exist. And they are the lowest income housing in San Francisco.
Right. They're being torn down little by little, right?
Yes, they are, and have been since the late 50s. But so there's a complaint about an SRO hotel where children live in the SRO hotel or hanging out front. So just to give a little, to think about this. If there are children who live in an SRO hotel with their parents, that means that they are sharing a single room with their parents. So you've got at least two people in that single room, and most likely more than that. You know, it could be two parents and a couple of kids, and that's not uncommon in the Tenderloin. So it's not strange to think that kids would want to hang out outside rather than be cramped in this tiny space all the time. But it's a problem for the members of the CBD that kids are hanging out front. They're congregating out front. you know, they're mostly Latino and Cambodian and Lao and black kids, and it makes the white members of the CBD very uncomfortable. So they sent one of their members to do some outreach and suggest to the kids they might want to join the YMCA or get involved in one of the after-school programs in the neighborhood rather than hang out on the sidewalk and make them very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. The kids weren't particularly amenable. There was no report of them being rude or dismissive, but they didn't join the programs. They didn't disappear. So the CBD has decided to write a letter to the police.
Yeah,
and that sense of entitlement, that you own public space and that you're being wronged if other people use that public space, people you don't like to see around, people who make you feel uncomfortable, is a really sick aspect of a certain segment of our society. And it's really terrifying for our future as a democracy.
It's being used in Santa Cruz, a group called Take Back Santa Cruz, which claims to have the purpose of trying to get rid of gang violence, shootings, and drug dealing, not to mention panhandlers and alcoholics, by coming down in large numbers and hanging out and sort of, you know, exerting a presence down there as a sort of a positive thing. And also, actually, it looks like, although it's not clear, I don't know if they're going to push for more, even more restrictive laws, because we have a whole cross network of restrictive laws. The people who are supposedly progressive in Santa Cruz kind of abandoned that after the earthquake, if they ever had it, who are on the city council, and did a deal with the downtown businesses to essentially pass a whole nest of anti-homeless laws that give the police wide discretionary enforcement powers to run off, ticket and harass people they don't like. And now that's been expanded to using the citizen's arrest power. And it's kind of pernicious here, because if a citizen arrests you, there's no liability by the police officer. The police officer is not liable if he or she conveys that request. They cite you for something. You have to go into court. You have to prepare a case. And then the member of the public doesn't even show up, you know. But you, in the meantime, are deterred from doing the activity you were doing. In this case, I go back to my own activity, which was singing the song Downtown with lyrics exposing anti-homeless practices, which we were doing in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz. And so what you get is this whole new situation where the police aren't accountable. They claim to be objective in the middle. And they say, we're just conveying these citizen arrests. And again, citizen arrests here have to do with mostly infractions, not misdemeanors.
Mm-hmm.
But when we try and do a counter-arrest, saying that's a false police report, we weren't doing anything of the kind, the police will not take our citizen arrest.
That sounds very objective.
Indeed. Well, that's why they wear the blue uniforms, because we know how objective they are.
Right.
Actually, I was trying, you know, I was sort of objective. We have a cafe in town which discourages police from coming in. If police officers come in, they close the cafe. That's the Sub Rosa Cafe, or at least that happened on one occasion. Police are not welcome in the cafe. And, you know, it's interesting that I guess in a way it's a little different. I mean, you might say everybody should be welcome, but I can understand why, in some circumstances, police are not considered welcome. So, but you would have to say you don't want, in a democracy, you want the police to be welcome, too. Right there, Coalition on Homelessness, man?
I mean, I don't see why not, but I think you could ask them not to do it while they're on the job.
Mm. Of course, police are always on the job, aren't they? Don't they carry their guns off duty and so forth?
I don't know. Is that true?
I'd heard that, you know, they're allowed to do that. I don't know if they actually do that. I know that a number of police officers engage in off-duty work, like banging on the doors of homeless vehicles and telling people to leave the neighborhood. And
oh, sure. But I mean, but legally, do cops always carry their weapons
that
off-duty?
I do not know. I do not. In fact, I expect you to research that and get back to me. Well, I appreciate this. Anything coming up in San Francisco that you think we should know about, or even, you know, statewide? Any hopeful signs? Any discouraging signs? Anything you want to, you know, look into your crystal ball for the next few months and see what you think is happening either in the San Francisco Bay Area or more broadly?
I don't have any predictions. I would say that there's some good indicators. I think you know that last week we had a fairly large march in San Francisco, maybe 700-800 people.
Western Regional Advocacy Project.
That's right, and it brought together homeless people from Los Angeles, from Fresno, from San Jose, from here, from the East Bay, Sacramento, and then also from Portland. And I think that's representative of some pretty good networking that's been going on between homeless people's organizations across the West Coast, but especially in California. And I'm hopeful. I'm not going to make any predictions, but I'm really hopeful that this work will result in some changes to really humanize
Well, I know you were making some demands about broadly that, you know, ending anti-homeless laws around, I guess, what, sleeping, also something about immigration, you know, ending laws that criminalize people for their immigration status.
Well, ending the practice of asking people about their immigration status before allowing them access to social services, yes.
Right. And then there was something about housing and the absurd.
Right. So the perspective that all of the member organizations of RAP sort of agree on is that the kind of homelessness we have right now in terms of its size in the United States really took off at the beginning of the 1980s. In San Francisco, for example, our first homeless shelter didn't exist until 1983. And that the fundamental cause of that is the federal government's defunding of public housing. We just stopped building new public housing, and over the course of the following three decades, you know, we slowly tore down a good portion of what existed or allowed it to just
Wasn't there
rot.
A lot of urban renewal in San Francisco in the 60s and 70s that involved destruction of black neighborhoods and so forth?
Yes, but, I mean, we're not actually talking about public housing there. That was private property that was being, taken via eminent domain.
Mm-hmm. Right, but it had the same effect of driving out low-income people.
Absolutely.
So I don't know, you know, the magic bullet of government funding for housing, I tend to be supportive, you know, but there's been this you know, increasing encroachment on the low-income facilities that have existed, you know, for previously. I mean, wretched facilities, perhaps, but they got even more wretched when, I guess, in New York they changed the shelter laws to allow, you know, wretched conditions to exist in so-called shelters.
Yeah.
And that was supposed to be a great humane move that would enable people to, you know, go into these things temporarily. And, of course, it wasn't even temporary, but it seemed to me just to be a way of institutionalizing and normalizing a grossly abnormal and gruesome situation.
The idea, as I understand it, the idea in New York was that shelter became an entitlement, which meant everybody, you know, deserved access at all times, which isn't the case in San Francisco, where, you know, there's a shelter bed for
I think this
is
before,
almost one out of every ten homeless
I think
people.
Entitlement came in 1990, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I could my recollection is unclear, but the change in the laws that allowed people to, you know, essentially facilitated the displacing of urban residents into things called shelters happened in the 70s, the late 70s, I think, you know, in terms of the changing of the laws.
I don't know about that.
That's, and I haven't researched it deeply, but that was what I got from one very articulate speaker on the issue and never researched it further. So, hey. Well.
It sounds like you both have homework to do.
I guess so. Well, Bob, stay in touch with us. I'm going to be sending you some questions of, as the legal eagle that you are, run some of our stuff by you and get your reaction as to the, you've seen the nasty laws we have here that make 95% of our sidewalks unsittable. And not only that, but you can't have a political table on 85% of them. You can't street perform on 85%. What's the situation for street performers up in San Francisco? Do you need a permit to busk on the streets?
No. I mean, they it's really hard for the government to really try to regulate street performers because of the First Amendment. And it's you know, it's harder for them to do it in a place like San Francisco where there are public interest attorneys will take cases like that on than it is in certain other parts of the country.
You'll be sending those attorneys down to us to help out, I assume.
As soon as you guys send bus fare.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'll look around. I guess that's it for me on this end. Is there anything more you want to conclude with?
That's it for me.
All right. Well, again, we have been talking with Uncle Bob up there at Coalition, or Senor Offer Westort, as he's known. And if, for those who want to get more information on these issues, you can go to Coalition on Homelessness website, Google for San Francisco Coalition on Homelessness, or Street Sheet, which is their weekly newspaper, which was, God, the last seven or eight years was archived until September when they stopped archiving, but you think they've started again, huh?
Yeah, and I mean, the December is definitely up.
Very good, very good. And, of course, if you want Street Spirit, give a call to me at 423-HUFF. That's the East Bay newspaper that... It's shrinking in size, but it's still a pretty good paper.
It's a damn good paper, I think. I mean,
I think so, too, but I don't know. It's recently gotten pretty thin. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just, you know, we're all getting a little thin, or I'm getting fat, but everybody else is getting thin. Anyway, thank you, Bob, for hanging with us and giving us all this, you know, stimulating discussion.
Thank you, Robert. It was good to be able to talk about it.
Pleasure, man.
Take care.
Bye-bye. And that's the Coalition on Homelessness, Bob
offer Westort up in San Francisco. You can review his discussions of a week ago. I think it was a week ago. Pretty sure. By going to www.huffsantacruz.org, clicking on the name of my show, which is Bathrobespierre's Broadsides. You know, Robespierre, the French Revolution, plus bathrobe, as in sleeping ban, sleeping outside, stupid laws. Let's wear a bathrobe and look at how ridiculous it is and walk around, which is kind of my approach to that. But he had a previous interview, which was also interesting. I recommend you check it out. It's on the Huff website, www.huffsantacruz.org, under Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. If you have any comments, anything you've heard, you can call in and talk about that, 427-3772. And while we're awaiting the flood of calls, how about we take this call? Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Rob.
It's Drum Circle Day.
How you doing?
I'm good. What's happening with you, sir?
Hey, I saw you at the Drum Circle yesterday.
I was lurking there with my tape recorder for a while.
Okay, that was great, man. You were lurking. You were one of those curmudgeons.
That was at the parking lot next to the farmer's market on Wednesday afternoon, where there is a regular drum circle. In fact, it's really the only place where people gather in a parking lot without a permit once a week, usually if it's shining, and not so frequently or not so numerously if it's raining. And you're one of them drummers, Dave. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So I just wanted to get with you on a few people have been cited for music in public.
Really?
You know,
tell me about that.
Suzanne, I know you played her on your show, just an interview of that. But another friend of mine, Tamarack's been cited, and he wants to get a hold of you, Rob.
Do you know when he
was... talk to you about your citation for playing music on the Pacific Garden Mall.
Okay.
And getting a citation for that, because he got one also, and he's really upset, you know. And
okay.
So I've been having to call people and let them know who's getting tickets now, because now there's this...
whole new deal.
Deal going on that, hey, you know, Santa Cruz, you know, I mean, if we all could remember that group that used to play at the Cooper House when I worked there as a dishwasher, Warrant, I believe it is. And he's still in town, I understand. But anyway, yeah, music on the mall, that was, you know, something that you could always do in Santa Cruz. Never a problem.
Well, you know, I'm going to call you off air probably tomorrow, Drum Circle Dave. Just to
I'd like to schedule. I got to do some emails. I'm going to put some out there, some electronics, so some digital information.
I mean, what we really need to do is kind of get together and start really keeping close tabs on these citations. I mean, I had hoped that the street performers.
It's at this point where it's getting rather critical.
I had hoped the Street Performers Guild would have another meeting, but it's really hard to get that to happen. I know, you know, Tom Noddy is out of the country. Brent Adams is...
On hiatus.
He's on... It seems like he's almost on permanent hiatus, so he doesn't... You know, I don't mind a guy being on hiatus, but his responsibility is before he leaves to, you know, tell us he's going. But, you know, people have their own concerns, their own needs. These are hard times for a lot of people. But
okay.
They're hard if we don't, even harder if we don't get together, I think.
Yeah, they're harder. And, you know, for me, you're doing interviews, and I see you, and I want to break away and talk to you, but I just don't have the moment because I'm standing up for our civil rights.
Well, anybody can call me at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Yeah, I mean, don't try not to call after midnight, you know, or before 8 a.m., but, you know, if it's serious, call at any time, and I might or might not be there. Often it's an answering machine, but I will get back to you, 423-HUFF, and I will try to get back to you, Dave, and to Tamarack, and if I had a number for Suzanne, I'd get back to her.
Right, well, you'll find both of them, I believe, on the mall, but maybe just sitting there now. I don't know what you're going to find. You know,
When did Tamarack get this ticket?
He just said that he would really like to get a hold of you because he was also given a ticket.
He didn't say when he got it, though.
Because in my conversation with him was that you guys got tickets.
Yeah. Well, I
and then he said, hey, wait a minute, I have a ticket.
Well, I'll get to him, Dave, and we'll see what happens there. And keep those reports coming in. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. There was no officers at the drum circle yesterday.
That's good.
And if you notice, the cars were moved at the market.
Cars were moved. What do you mean?
Well, so that the drums could enter the market, like the sound was not...
Oh, you mean there was no big buffer anymore?
There's no big buffer there anymore.
Has that resulted in more complaints from the
drummers? No, I doubt it. I think it resulted in we need these drummers to drum up more business.
Really?
That's how I'm taking it, but maybe that's...
Well, I know that there were some merchants who didn't like the drumming, although, you know, it seemed to be certainly mixed. And so I when we were doing research on it about a year ago, that's what I found.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's, I don't know if that's good or bad. I guess that remains to be seen.
Well, the only protection we had was the sign that we have up there that welcome to the drum circle.
Well, the protection you have is the determination of people to continue, you know, exercising First Amendment rights. And
yes,
you know,
if you talk to a lot of my friends, they would say, hey, there's no reason for this not keeping on going here at this.
Well, yeah, I mean, see, I got to, you know,
property.
Honestly, I'm not a big drum fan myself.
Right, right, right.
I'm just a First Amendment fan, and that's, you know, mm-hmm. I'm a fan of people being able to use public spaces and not being driven away by a bunch of nervous, you know, gentrification yuppies who are concerned about, you know, homogenizing the area. But I appreciate the call, Dave. I'm going to roll
hey,
on.
Hey, get on with your show. Take it easy, Santa Cruz. Peace, Robert Norris. Goodbye.
Thanks, Dave. Bye-bye. Let's get back to some of the... street interviews, because I got plenty of those left over.
Look at Butts, Free Spirits.
I like this story. Now, you, sir, you're watching this. Don't you think this individual should be taken out of town and taught a good lesson?
Oh, at least I'm from a redwood.
Redwood. Any comments about his sign, Obama's Wars? When will you speak out?
Well, I'm speaking out right now.
And just what are you saying?
Fuck him in the neck.
This is a pretty strong statement. This isn't a sexual urge. It's rather an expression of outrage, yes?
Well, you know, he is kind of an attractive fellow, but no, my preference is don't include him in my sexual parameters.
You're a homophobe, admit it. You hate African-Americans? What's going on here?
You know what I hate? The specious arguments that would make me seem to be any of those things.
Well, you caught me there. What can I say? Nailed against the wall here. What's your first name?
Oh, let's see. Which one do you want?
Give me one.
Panayotis.
Panayotis?
That's right.
So, Panayotis, are you a long-timer here, a lifer, so to speak, a new arrival?
55 years.
And... what's your feeling about the downtown? Have you been in the actual a lot of time downtown during that 55 years?
Well, when I came back after one of someone's wars, Santa Cruz is actually the kind of place you wanted to be.
What year was that?
That would be in the 70s.
I'll take the spirit change side down.
There was a free spirit, freedom of movement, music. There were even clubs here, nightclubs, where you could get the demon rum almost anywhere you went.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Bands like you wouldn't believe. And then along came a progressive movement in name only. They closed all of those places down, took freedoms away. Why, my goodness, you know, the demon cigarette, one part per million. It's enough to give you secondhand and smoke disease, isn't it?
Not to mention first-hand car exhaust fumes.
That was where I was heading. Thank you.
Proud, Robert.
You smoke more car exhaust per hour, per minute. You leave your window open anywhere in this county, state, or country, and you're sucking in car exhaust. And we're worried about cigarettes? And by the way, Santa Cruz Sentinel, thank you for using my image in your paper to demonize something that I was already doing. Again, Santa Cruz Sentinel.
Interrupt you because here we have a passionate person. All right, so for free radio, what's your name, Al?
Oh, my name is Julie, and Artie wants to speak.
We got conned by President Obama, and greed and selfishness are here, and they're getting ready to implement the New World Order, and I don't like it, and I think there's going to be an uprising against the people, and I think God's going to help us.
And what do you think?
I'm a little disillusioned the more I'm hearing. I didn't know I voted for Obama, but I'm hearing all these things now.
Well, what possibly could you be disillusioned about? Our Fuhrer is leading us to war. What's wrong with that?
No, now I'm seeing this, and I'm feeling upset like a lot of people are.
But it's only Bush's wars. Just because he had to escalate them a little. I mean, what's wrong with that?
Oh, right. Mick, do you want to say a few words?
I just want to say I feel we were conned. We were completely conned. I bought the idealism. My name is Melissa, and I feel like I bought the idealism. I marched on Inauguration Day down Pacific Street, and I've seen the Obama conspiracy. I've heard about it, and I'm outraged. I'm outraged.
Now, we're talking about a sit-in in Farr's office. Representative Farr, our U.S. representative on Inauguration Day, January 20th. Would that interest the two of you?
Absolutely. I'll be there. Yeah.
You want to give me a contact so we can contact you and let you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me give you my card.
Thank you. Okay.
My name's Mick Helmel. I'm from Iowa.
Go ahead,
here's my card. Make food, not war.
So you have a food, not bombs button on.
Make food, not war.
Tell them the shotgun story.
I worked for the Obama Biden campaign on Election Day in D31. I had a 12-gauge shotgun pointed at me. I heard the double pump click, hanging out, just hanging little door hangers that said, vote. And it had the senator's picture. He was a senator at the time from the state of Illinois. I said, I'm sorry, sir. I will get off your porch. He says, we don't vote.
Now, this was a pro-Obama guy or an anti-Obama guy?
Anti.
Obviously, it was just... This was November 4th of 2008.
You haven't decided to pick up a shotgun and join him yet, but you're thinking about it.
Yeah, I own no firearms.
Nor do I, for that matter. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
About politics, I'm learning.
You've just signed up for a possible occupation or at least a visit to Farr's office.
Sure, thank you. Here
right
you go.
Here, so be careful right
What's your name?
I'm Robert.
Robert, nice to meet you. Julie Melissa.
My card, number on the back.
You going to be in town too? Or?
Oh, yeah, he's here now.
Yeah.
I hope to be on the 20th. I'm not sure yet.
Why don't you write down your name and number on
here?
Don't do it on that card, do it on this one. Do it on this one. It's time to get everybody together. And let me give you another card.
Yeah, thank you.
Doing some organizing here, perhaps, of a sit-in in Farr's office on the 20th. And we're talking now with
Artie Finman.
And Artie, you have a red book there you're going to be reading from. You've been doing some writing?
Yes. I want to list 8 things that President Obama has done in his first administration, which causes me deep concern. And by the way, I voted for him. I donated a lot of money. Number one. President Obama is building secret prisons, and he must tell the American people why he's doing this, and he must not make this a secret anymore. Number two, he wants to set up a civilian police force of all citizens under the age of 64, and I have a very, very bad feeling about that. Number three, he is continuing the policy of rendition and torture. He has said that torture by Americans is not allowed in war situations, but it opens the door to torture in other situations. So, in effect, torture remains. Number four, he has reinstated the Patriot Act. Number five, he is adding people to his terrorism watch list. Number six, he was in favor of the bank bailout, which was opposed by the American people and initially opposed by the Congress, and that was one of the greatest betrayals of the American people because what it really was a financial coup d'etat. And the last two are the ones that concern me the most. Number seven, he appointed people into his government who all represent Wall Street instead of the American people. And the last thing I want to say is that he did not see the Dalai Lama when the Dalai Lama was in Washington, D.C. And I want to say that the world, our country and our world, has been controlled by the Bilderberg Group since 1954. The Bilderberg Group is 125 very, very little people who have pretty much run the world. The Bilderberg Group has operated in secret all these years. They do not allow press coverage, and they foment war, and they foment chaos. And the agenda of the Bilderberg meeting is to destroy this country and destroy all nations and set up a one-world government with international banking, with NATO and the UN as a military force. And the Bilderberg Group, with them at their head, anybody who opposes them is eliminated. They want total slavery, constant perpetual war, and zero growth for the population.
You might think of it as order.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I want to say that if anybody says that they're trying to do the right thing, it's true. Adolf Hitler wanted a better world.
I like that you have some good words for it. Sure. Thank you.
I'm not finished. I'm 61 years old. When I was a little boy, I was told that what makes this country great is freedom. But right now, the Bilderberg bozos and the corporate executives and the Wall Street executives, they want to take everything away from us. They've been working at it very hard and very conscientiously. I give them a lot of credit because they worked very hard for over 150 years to at least the robber barons of the late 19th century. And right now they have finally succeeded because they have people in Washington. They are poised. It's right here, the world water. I'm just one guy on a street in Santa Cruz, but the world does not realize that they have gotten taken, and the new world order is right here. But I do not think that God will permit them to do it, because just in the nick of time, just as when the Death Star is poised to destroy the rebel planet, and they actually press the button for the Death Star, okay.
Marty, there's a bust happening up the street, okay. So I got to run, but I'll be back.
Marty Finman, and he's here to refresh you.
All right.
He went back.
Thank you.
You know, I don't know about the conspiracy theory with the Builder Banks, the Builder Brands, or whatever, but it's interesting. I was walking around town with a sign on that had to do with, very simply, Obama's policies around the wars, the endless escalating wars, the increasing military, which, to me, has been a key issue of organizing and kind of a dividing point, a waterline, a line in the sand for a lot of people in terms of just fighting back against corrupt political power, where we're talking about whether it's LBJ or Nixon or Reagan or Bush or Clinton, whoever you're talking about, if you're talking about circumstances where these politicians surrendered to the military mentality and engaged in aggressive wars abroad or the equivalent of war. And what we have here, of course, as everybody knows, is no meaningful change from the Bush policies internationally. And yet you have the same voices that were speaking out against Bush silent. It's amazing. I mean, as I said, I walked down the street with this sign, Obama's war is when we speak out. People just kept looking away. They just didn't want to say anything. And the only time I did get some reaction, which, sounded initially kind of encouraging, is, frankly, which sounds to me like, maybe I'm ignorant on the issue, but it sounds like a little bit like nut conspiracy right-wing stuff. Although this guy doesn't sound like a right-winger particularly. When I tried to email these folks back to see if people really did want to go to Farr's office on the 20th, I got, no, that's not really our interest. And so we didn't really do anything. I wasn't aware there was any. Maybe there was an action at Representative Farr's office on the 20th, and he's been voting for the military budget. And indeed, even the people who are the most outspoken against Bush, Barbara Lee, the best they can come up with that I've seen are resolutions just don't send any more troops to Afghanistan, as though maintaining the status quo there and in Iraq, as you can see, where violence is escalating every day, the civil war is resuming, is just, is the way to go. I just can't believe there isn't a breaking point for the American people, but I'll keep watching, and I'll keep carrying around signs and trying to hold protests and doing what I do, I think. I mean, that's just what I tend to do and my mode of communication. Back to the street interviews, and I believe we're talking about the 9th of January.
I'll be back.
Yep.
So we have two police officers here off to the side, actually. A man and a dog. Officer Winston, about 210, at the side of New Leaf Market. What's happening?
Wanted to find out. That's Courtney.
Oh, it is.
Okay.
So we have officers Albert and Winston talking with a woman here by the side of the... Hi, how's it going?
Good. Maybe not right now. It's good. It's really good.
Officer Winston is moving to stand between me and the person involved. What are you being charged with, or what are you being held for?
Sticking up for my friend. And he had marijuana, and he didn't tell me why he's arresting him for marijuana. He has no excuse to why. He's just doing it. And I'm getting arrested because I'm sticking up for them.
What's your full name?
Courtney McGregor.
How do you spell it?
C-O-R-T-N-Y.
Ask him what the charge is.
Sticking up for my friend.
Right, but what does he say the charge is? What does the officer say the charge is?
A 148.
That's resisting, interfering, or obstructing an officer. Anything you want Free Radio to know before you get hauled off in the pokey?
That this will all be over soon. And that I love you all so much. And that this is absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous what it has come to. This isn't free. This isn't living. There's no reason for this at all. There's no reason for this at all. It's just causing more violence. It's just causing more everything.
What violence?
Well,
this.
You are, in fact, being led in handcuffs, and we're walking past the Del Mar Theater now. So what exactly happened that provoked this?
Can you talk to her later, please?
Well, I won't have an opportunity to do it.
Why? Why?
For Free Radio. So the public can know. At which point Officer Winston now has her at the...
Hanging out with my family.
Talk loudly.
I've just been hanging out with my family.
Right.
Doing what I do best. Being happy. Trying to be happy.
And then what happened?
I stuck up for my friend and got arrested for it.
And the woman is being put into the back of the squad car. And the friend in question with his dog is here. Maybe we can hear more from him as to what's happened.
This hers?
Yeah, it's hers. What's up?
So what happened?
Basically, they were citing me for possession of marijuana. And my friend came up and asked what was going on. And from there, they proceeded to argue with her and arrest her.
Did you physically attack or touch the officers at any time?
No, sir. She just used her voice.
What did she say?
She asked, why are you arresting him? You know, or why are you bothering him? You know.
And what did they say?
I said, please, or you gotta leave. Otherwise, I'm gonna arrest you. Walk away, otherwise I'm going to arrest you.
How close was she to the scene?
She was probably a good 10 feet away.
And
I said it was
I'm not sure why the tape is going in and out, but bear with it. This happened during the daytime in front of... Initially, the incident started in front of the side of New Leaf Market at downtown Pacific Avenue, along Soquel Avenue, and then she was walked in handcuffs to the squad car, which was near the Del Mar Theater, and we're talking to the original person who was contacted by the police, who I think may have gotten a citation for marijuana, but she was the one arrested, although he says, as you hear, that there was no violence or anything of that sort involved. So let's hear some more.
Okay, for her to be there.
Were you in conversation with the officers as this happened or not?
No, I was standing there. He's writing the ticket.
And did what she was saying stop the officer from writing a citation?
Shit, no, I can write and talk at the same time.
And which officer was writing the citation?
Winston.
Yeah, yeah.
And which officer made the decision to make an arrest, as far as you could see?
Winston. That was the only officer there.
So Officer Albert wasn't there.
He put the cuffs on her, Winston did.
And what point did Officer Albert arrive?
As he put the cuffs on him, or on her.
How many minutes after the original stop would you estimate?
Probably 10 minutes.
Have you been given a ticket?
Yes.
For?
Obsession of marijuana.
marijuana.
Is this recreational or medical or medical use?
Medical.
And where's your medical marijuana card?
I actually don't have one for this state.
In what condition do you use it to help with?
ADHD or leg pain.
Have you seen a doctor about any of this?
Yes.
And did they recommend it?
Yes.
And do you have a statement from the doctor that's written that says they recommended it?
Out of Washington, yes.
Still a statement. How long ago?
Probably within the last year.
Is it? You still have access to that statement?
Yes.
Well, that should be adequate defense in court to quash the ticket.
I'm not worried about it.
And your friend is someone, is this a close friend or just an old passerby? Or?
This is a good friend of mine.
You're going to let us know what happens. Looks like she's getting a more serious charge for criticizing a police arrest than you are.
Yeah. Huh. True.
Criticize a police arrest, get handcuffed, and go to jail. The new rule in Santa Cruz. Here's a woman in a squad car being held for that purpose.
What?
Criticize a police arrest, get handcuffed, and go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
Bank officer Winston, that's W-I-N-S-T-O-N, Winston, here on the street. Object to an arrest for possession of medical marijuana, get handcuffed, and put into a squad car. Downtown Santa Cruz, your constitution at work. Your money goes to support this woman being arrested for criticizing a police, for citing this man for medical marijuana, although he has a medical condition that requires use of medical marijuana. Yes, Santa Cruz, so liberal, so progressive. Santa Cruz police, paid for with your money. How long have you been in town?
7 months.
And how many times have you been cited?
Quite a few.
False imprisonment and false arrest because Officer Winston didn't like the criticism that an officer that he was getting around an arrest for medical marijuana. False imprisonment, false arrest, under color of law, folks. You've got a gun and a uniform and a position, you can do what you want in Santa Cruz. So it seems.
What's the number for the jail?
I don't know. It's in the phone book.
Where is this hit?
If she raised her voice so loudly as to make it difficult for the officer to write the ticket.
Like you said, anybody can write as long as they write for years and talk at the same time.
And what exactly did she say?
She asked him, why are you harassing me?
And what did Officer Winston say?
I said, he just continued writing the ticket and kept on telling her to leave.
Witnessing and criticizing a police arrest in Santa Cruz, get handcuffed, get taken to jail, get charged with a misdemeanor. Thanks to Officer Winston here. He can discuss it with you if you'd like. I'm sure he has a full explanation of what's going on and how your money is being reasonably spent on his salary. Arrested a woman here for criticizing a police action where the police were citing a man for medical marijuana.
So there I am bleating out my concerns on the sidewalk. But that's it. That's all the time I got back. The clock man has arrived to move the clock ahead 4 minutes, eliminating my goodbye time. So all I've got time to say is, happy trails to you.
until we meet again. Anyway, I'll be back on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning. And in the meantime, I invite you to join Uncle Dennis with From the Cream to the Dregs. We'll be right back.
Strangeness there from Pink Floyd. I'm Uncle Dennis with the gravelly, sniffly voice tonight here at Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1. We're also out on the wide weird web at freakradio.org. Welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs, a Thursday night exploration of the music of the 60s and the 70s until 11 o'clock. We do, of course, have the Brew of the Week coming up about 15 minutes here, and then at 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use, followed thereafter by more music, and at 10 o'clock, we will spotlight a group for an entire hour. That's called our Spotlight Group of the Week, so stay tuned for all of that, and of course, followed at 11 o'clock by the Hour of Slack,